Wigby Mumbo traded to the Ottawa GGs to replace an Amakar Polk and to keep that run game going. But you trade Josh Jansen to the Windsor Lancers to have a quarterback? Oh my God.
Who says no? Hello and welcome to At the 55, your home for OUA football. Me and Tom are back on the mics to wish you all a happy new year, a happy holiday season, and to recap some of the action that went down in the 2023 OUA season and to set up what's on the horizon both for the OUA and U Sports, and also to talk about a bit of content we have coming up in the new year as well. Tom, we always sometimes play this game where we record something before we send it out, and then it makes me think about how I want to set it up when I pass the mic over to you metaphorically. So I'm going to go with the angle that it actually is New Year's. Tom, how the heck are you doing? It's 2024.
Oh, what an amazing 2024 it's been so far. This is incredible. Yes, I'm doing really well, my friend. Anytime I get to hop on the mics with you, it always brings such a massive smile to my face. To our listeners, I hope I'm sounding just a little bit nicer, just a little bit better. I may or may not have gotten a brand new podcasting mic. So if you can tell a difference, fantastic. If you can't, it was still a great gift anyways, and I'm happy to use it.
And to the little joke there, we are here recording on December 30th of 2023. So if the world all goes to heck in a handbasket within the next 2 days, that's why we sound so chipper when you're listening to this in the apocalyptic aftermath of the New Year's of 2024. But while the world is still spinning here in 2023, what we're going to do for you today is go over the what we are calling the New Year's resolutions for all 11 teams, plus the OUA and the U Sports. Broadly speaking, based sort of on where those teams and organizations are situated from where we sit today and from what we are pervy to, or what we are, you know, can sort of see on the horizon. Additionally to that, we somewhat set this up on our last pod when we talked about the coaching carousel. But the next piece of content that you will be getting from us is called the exit meeting, where we're going to, in more depth, go through all 11 teams, break down how their season went, take a way too early look into how things are looking for that team on the horizon. Themes like draft eligible players, fifth year players, guys that were injured who might be coming back, coaching moves, all these sorts of things to look at as we exit 2023 and into the new year. How are these teams looking in sort of a larger scope? Today is just a little amuse-bouche of where all these teams are, and sort of we're framing it, as I said, as their New Year's resolution, what these teams are hoping for to make a move in the right direction in perspective to where those teams are right now. Tom, how does that sound to you, my friend?
Oh, it sounds fantastic. I think this is going to set up for some phenomenal content, some phenomenal talking points with us, and I am so excited to just dive into this.
And for the exit meetings, we are getting special guests who are privy to a lot of the goings on at these various clubs. So that'll be really exciting. You're not going to want to miss that. So stay tuned to our feeds when we start pumping those out. The dates are still a bit undetermined as we are still booking some of our guests, but you can expect it probably in mid to late January when we start to pump out the content. Much like for the exit meetings, we will be putting them out in reverse order of how the teams finished in the 2023 season. We will be doing that same order as we go through the New Year's resolutions for this very podcast. So, Tom, can you remind me who finished dead last in the OUA in 2023?
Oh, that would be a little team called the York Lions.
It most certainly is. Tom, why don't you get us started with the New Year's resolution for those York Fighting Lions?
Listen, there's a whole lot of things that's going wrong with York. We've kind of detailed them a few times throughout certain podcasts throughout the years and things. And obviously, when you're losing games on an average of like 70 points a game, there's a lot of things that need to change. But it first and foremost starts with you have to find a head coach who actually knows how to win. Not this two-dual system, not this finding somebody off the street. Go out, do the search, pay the guy, find a coach that is going to lead you to a victory. That is your New Year's resolution. Everything else, there's a ton of work that needs to be done, can follow. But the first and foremost, find a damn head coach.
And I think that's capital W win, because this isn't just a function of can you pick up a win or maybe two next year. This is someone who's a culture setter that's going to help with recruiting. It's going to help establish the program moving forward so that you can build something up. The great line, and this will kind of lead into who our next team is, that I always attribute to your former teammate in Jacob Zott, who relayed this information that Coach Potasik told him when he was getting recruited, is we want players not to make a 4 to 5 year decision. We want players to make a 40 to 50 year decision. That's the type of coach that Tom's talking about. The person that will sit across from those parents and that child and that athlete and tell them that York is the place to be, not just for their football, but for everything that comes after that. That's where York's at right now. And I can't wait to get that pod up that we have for the exit meeting episode. Tom, I'll take our next team. Not just because I think we'll just ping pong back and forth here, but also to spare you from having to talk about your alma mater, because in the second to last slot in the OUA in 2023 were, of course, your McMaster Marauders. And it was a theme coming out of 2022. It was the same theme from day one when they lost at home to Windsor. But it really comes down to solidifying that offensive line to protect a young man who could very well be a potential all-star in the OUA. We saw when he was, at his best, slinging the ball out there to some of his targets. This is a team that we know the defense is there, the special teams is there, and the weapons are on offense, but it starts up front on that offensive line. And it gets that much more harder. I'll pass it to you on this because you were the one digging this up. And we'll do this a little more detailed when we do the exit meeting, but you already are at a bit of a disadvantage because you might be losing some of those guys that were already part of that O-line, as porous as it was at times.
Mm-hmm. No, most definitely. And now we'll get into who we think is going to be leaving, the fifth-year seniors and everything else. There does need to be something of a disclaimer because the COVID year might come into effect here where, even though they are technically, they've been at the university for 5 years, they might still get another year of eligibility if they wanted to because of COVID and everything else. So just a little disclaimer there. But as of right now, listed on their website, on the roster, there are 16 fifth-year seniors on this McMaster Marauder team. Not to mention the fourth-year guys like a Jackson Cooling, who have the potential to get drafted and might very well stick if they go to the CFL. So this team, regardless, however you think in terms of maybe it did need a massive overhaul, it's coming. And a big chunk of that 16 is on that offensive line. So the recruiting needs to be more important now than ever, making sure that you've got the right guys in the right system and the right mindset so that you can go out and get Mac back to where I think it should be. And all of the alumni are begging to be. But yeah, there's a big overhaul coming and you got to get out in front of this.
Yeah, and you mentioned Cooling's name, who obviously was so important to Keegan Hall's success. But then you think of guys like Nana Yaserbe, Devontae Ballantine in that defensive secondary that made the defense so spectacular and kept them in games. Man, it's going to be, I can't wait to break that one down in more detail. Tom, you get the shot to set up our next team, the U of T Blues. Where are we going with their New Year's resolution?
You got to find some consistency on offense if you're U of T. We went into last year thinking, oh my God, is U of T back? They finished 4-4. Kinsale Phillip looks like the godsend, the final response or the replacement for Clay Sequeira. We're thinking, oh my God, this is amazing. And then Kinsale gets benched and we're seeing Scott Barnett, and he does some good things. He does some great things, whatever. But you can tell that if Scott Barnett, if he is your guy, if you give him the entire training camp, if you give him time as you are the starter, you're our guy, I think there you'll see something of a stronger sense on that offense. I think they do a little bit better. Or even like you just find out what the hell is going on with Kinsale, whether it's, if it's an issue with him or if it's just every team now understands, hey, shit, this guy is going to be their entire offense. We need to shut this guy down. Whatever that looks like, you need to find consistency on offense. Whoever it is at your head spot, whoever you're losing, whatever – consistency on offense, I think, is really where this team needs to focus on.
And I'm going to throw the challenge at them again. We'll bring it up on the next episode of U of T. That defense scored points.
Mm-hmm.
And I threw it back at them that you don't need to score six defensive touchdowns again next year. Hey, maybe you'll score more. But let's see if that's a trademark of this defense. Let's see if that's something consistent. Six is a high bar, so I'm not saying you need to get there. But is that actually something you can claim to hang your hat on?
Well, I'm gonna put a little asterisk on that six because where did four of those
don't
six
do it against
come
Mac.
From? Yeah, they sure did. They sure did. Now, nothing against Toronto. Obviously, they were in the right position. They did that, whatever. But a little asterisk there. Little asterisk.
Well, asterisk or not, hopefully U of T can get back into the swing of things because we've said it, guests on the show have said it, and just so many people around the OUA have said it that Ontario football is better when Toronto and golly, if we can even have York showing some signs of life, mm-hmm. football across the province is better. I'll take our next team, my alma mater in this case, as we go to the Royal City to check out the Guelph Griffins, now under the tutelage of course, Coach Soria. And this has been, once again, a thread over a couple years running now. And I don't say that unintentionally because it's stop the run. We've seen so many good things with this team, and I at least didn't do the deep dive into the roster the way we have with some of these teams to think about, well, you might need to, you know, fill the coffers for some of the positional players here or there. Somewhat irrespective of that, Guelph has been bringing in talent year after year after year, pretty much since the Stu Lang era. That's not the issue. You're switching defensive coordinators, having Donovan Carter take over more of that 3-4. That puts even more pressure on that defensive line. I think Woodmansey might be done there or pretty close to some of those other interior guys that they have. Don't know the numbers on the linebackers, but a defense that was already susceptible to the run, I have an inkling as I can look on your face, Tom, and see that you are scouring their roster as I'm filling the time here to let you be able to find those numbers. I have a hunch a problem might become more problematic, especially if you're doing a 3-4, which the last thing I'll say here, we saw Carlton hang their hat on being a 3-4 defense for years. And what did teams do? They ran the damn ball on them. So Guelph, stop the run.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, that 3-4 defense really makes me nervous. And I know I have total faith in Donovan Carter, don't get me wrong, and they did show up in a 40 front against a couple of teams midway in the season when we think that Donovan Carter took over as the DC. So they obviously have the capabilities of doing that. But, you know, it comes back to how well are your linebackers able to fill gaps? How well are your defensive linemen in just taking on double teams across the board so that your linebackers can still be free and they can do their thing? Now, list here, Curtis Woodmansey and Josh Campbell are fourth-year players.
Okay.
And I think that means that's taking into account the COVID year as well because it does say they're in the fifth year of school. So they can come back. I don't think they're losing anybody here as an outright fifth-year player with the COVID year. So they still have all of their guys back, which the other thing too, just as a little sidebar onto this, keep your damn team healthy. If this Griffin team is healthy the entire year with guys like Scott Murray and everybody else on that defense alone, they're in the top five at least of the OUA easily, even with two first-year quarterbacks. Stay healthy.
Go Griffs, baby. The last thing super quick on the 3-4 front that's kind of fascinating with guys like Joshua Campbell and Curtis Woodmansey is that they kind of both play that nose position. So unless it's just a function that you're always going to have a OUA all-star caliber nose tackle in your 3-4 that like oftentimes that guy's going to get tired out. He's taking on double teams, sometimes triple teams. If you're just rushing three in your pass sets and things of that nature, that you can always just have a guy rotating in to be bullying that center and interior guys. That's the other thing that kind of cannibalize each other from that regard. Can't wait to dive into that Guelph pod. I'm rocking the Guelph cap. You all know if you listen to the last pod, I am back in on the Royal City with gusto. Take us down the road, though, to the KW, Tom.
Oh yeah, the next team on our list is the Waterloo Warriors. And this one, we dove into a little bit more of the actual nitty-gritty of things because Waterloo, your New Year's resolution is to finish in the end zone. They
Yes.
had the worst red zone percentage out of everybody in the OUA, with maybe the exception of York. Maybe if we want to like whatever, but York also didn't get into the red zone to begin with, so maybe they're 0 of 1 kind of thing. But anyways, Waterloo, get into the damn end zone here. You have a bunch of stats here listed, Zach. Why don't you bring us through that?
Well, just pulling them off the website, Waterloo goes 18 of 23 in their red zone percentage. So 78% in the red zone, 11 touchdowns in 23 attempts, which gives them a 48% touchdown completion percentage. On the whole, yeah, I think they were last if you take Waterloo out of the equation. And I think really this was our way of saying that if you go back to the, I guess, narrative, if you want to use that term, though it's sometimes overused in sports commentating, that we were talking about with Waterloo this year. And it was really Waterloo and Carleton were kind of these parallel teams that we were looking at, kind of the Windsors of 2022, where if you don't see it, these teams are good. And when it comes to Waterloo especially, they move the ball really well. Now, you know, they are losing guys like Justin Sukar, James Bazaliga, once again with that caveat of depending on how the COVID eligibility factors in with those players, as well as a number of guys on the defense, like maybe you've heard of him, Tyson Hergott. So not to say that there might not be that dip, but finish in the red zone. You've got young players on offense. Obviously, we know the back and forth they've done with their quarterbacks over the last 2 years. Some of the young running backs that they've had who've started to look really good. So I think ultimately a way of saying that A, Waterloo was better than you might have remembered this past year. And of course, that's relative to where we thought they were going to be coming off of the loss of Trey Ford, sort of the year two of the rebuilding project post Trey Ford. And there's some potential moving forward, caveating with the players that they're going to miss. But I thought that was just our way of saying, hey, this is now where you mature as a young offense and finish drives with sixes and not threes. And sometimes it was nothing at all. So, Waterloo, you know we love you dearly. Let's now take that step as an offense. And we know that you have the personnel from the coaching standpoint and in that community as a whole, that sort of whole organization. We know that you're rock solid from that standpoint. Time to grow up now on that offense and start winning games. You're at that stage where you're in those 50-50 battles and unfortunately falling too far too many times on the wrong side of those. Win those battles. That starts by finishing in the red zone.
Hell yeah.
And I guess with that, let's move to the team that we kind of paired them with in the Carleton Ravens. And I'll set this up, and Tom, the note that we have in our Google Drive ultimately came down to get your run game going. And this is a bit of a interesting point because we talked all year with them about how it was going to be by hook or by crook with Coach Grant there, year two under his leadership. We saw the effectiveness he had at MAC coordinating that offense when they won a Yates Cup. And with this young star in Tristan Lefebvre, and with now and pressure's on now because you've got an all-Canadian in Kasim Ferdinand in that receiving core. But I won't even, I won't push make more fun about that, or not make fun, but I won't criticize that more. I'll just say a very strong receiving core. And we saw that they clearly said by their actions, by hook or by crook, we will succeed on offense passing the ball. And for the last 2 years, we were crying to the heavens, whether it was something going on with him as an athlete or the way they were using him. But how did Josh Ferguson fall off so far from how dominant he was working with Nathan Carter? And maybe that's the secret to it. When it was him and old man Nathan Carter in the backfield for Carleton in 2018 and 19, that run game was great. And if they are going to be this pass dominant offense, you know what? We've seen it before. You kept referencing. We talked about already that 2019 MAC season. They just said, we will death by a thousand cut you, dumping it off here and there and taking our shots. And Frederick Hatchie and Kasim Ferdinand and all these dudes. I'd still like to see, now that Josh Ferguson's gone, who are you going to turn to on the run game? Or are you just going to say, nope, the ball remains in Lefebvre's hands?
Yeah. That's a lot of pressure to put on a quarterback if you are like, if you don't have a run game. I mean, we saw it at Mac. When you are physically unable to run the ball, you have to then throw 50, 60 times a game. And eventually, especially if you can't run the ball, you have teams that are just, A, the defensive lines are going to pin their ears back and just come after your quarterback and you're going to get unnecessary hits. But B, take out a Sam linebacker, put another DB in there instead.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're dealing with a whole defense that's based on defending against the pass when you can't run the ball. So I think just purely for Lefebvre's own benefit, to make sure that he continues to develop as a young quarterback, making sure that you have a run game has to be a part of that. Now, we saw some stuff with Alex Gale at the end of the season for sure, but you know, even in the last game, the playoff game against Windsor, 18 attempts for 48 yards. The 18 attempts part is what I'm specifically, they're trying. They're focusing on it. They're trying to do something with that, which is fine, but you got to develop that run game. It has to be there. If you really want to make sure that you can get out of the OUA, you need to have a balanced attack at least.
Yeah, and I'm glad you highlighted Alex Gale's name because he was showing some good things. Of course, kind of going back to what we said about maybe Ferguson's success coming predominantly when he was with Carter, it was Gale having success with Josh Ferguson still getting carries. And to your point about putting that pressure on a quarterback, it's seemingly Tristan Lefebvre's a different type of cat than when they had Tanner DeYoung, who, as you're saying, if you're going to go with that, take out your Sam, put in a more true DB look, Tanner had the athleticism. And I don't know that Lefebvre doesn't. I don't think we've seen it yet, where if you're going to be dropping seven back, he can make you pay for it. If you're not going to leave a spy or a robber or anyone like that in the box to add that extra support, contain whatever it might be, we haven't seen that from Lefebvre yet. Maybe he has it and they just haven't let him let it loose, but it's just, it's mildly concerning when you're going to pigeonhole your offense that much. And maybe they can do it because, as we said, they have a man at the top. Going back to that thing for York, having someone with that track record to instill that belief based on their leadership and all the things that they can point to that they've done and accomplished with doing things their way, seemingly they have that guy. That trickle-down effect, I think, is in full effect already at Carleton. I love how they're looking right now. And you know I have passion for another team in the Ottawa region. So why don't you get it going with what our New Year's resolution is for that team?
Your Ottawa GGs, our New Year's resolution, we have two for them. The first one, get some pass rushers. That defense, I think, was really slept on in the entire year. They really showed some fantastic promise with their, obviously, our guy Harnour. They stopped the run pretty effectively, and they were decent in the pass, especially in the back end. But you saw a big part of that was relying on the quarterback to make a mistake rather than really getting a rush in on them consistently and getting after him so that you can force those mistakes. I think if the Ottawa GGs can find a legit pass rusher who can get after the quarterback with the guys that they have in their defensive secondary who are coming back, this could be a top-tier defense. I think that's really what you're missing here.
Yeah, 100%. And they are the team I go to when we go back and forth about, you know, is it too much by the numbers at times or too much by the eye test? Because by the numbers, that Ottawa defense wasn't that great, but they had so many of these guys. Like, we were, you know, we were just singing the praises of the brothers Cumberbatch all year long, right? And just look at the awards to see how they did, right? Eli Cruikshank, who got injured, as well as we mentioned with Harnour Dhaliwal, and like those are all guys that are getting into their third and into their like fourth and fifth years. Obviously, we know that they are losing,
Mr. Carboneau,
Max Carboneau, of course, in the middle. Which is a huge loss, as well as his partner in the linebacking core in Emmanuel Abogiagyan. So when we kind of look at the three tiers of your defense, that secondary, which, I mean, gosh, I mean, with James Peter being there the year prior, maybe really that linebacking core really has been the thing they've hung their hat on. But it's, you know, that secondary is right there with how good it is as well. That defensive front, not that they haven't had good players there. They got a guy in Riley Hildebrandt who's in his third year, looking to get a little more experience after this past year, but of course more of an interior guy, a guy like Kevin Anderson more on the outside, and maybe they'll step up. But yeah, and the big thing I know we talked about, and we'll leave it on this, is especially with teams like Ottawa and Carleton, how big a factor with the Quebec tuition hike for non-francophone or for anglophone students is going to affect now players that were perhaps in that Ottawa region who want to play ball across the border there, who might stay now. So who is that young Ethan Gregorcich type player? And obviously that's a heavy name to throw around, because we don't see players like that come around that often to have that impact in their first year. But who's going to be that guy to step up? Because really, they weren't getting after the pass. They weren't getting into the pass rush as well as you would like to see for a team that I think defensively is among the best of the best.
Most definitely, yeah. And I think that's really their biggest area. That's the biggest spot for them to really improve on, which is why we kind of mentioned it. Going into the second resolution that we have this team, obviously we saw there was a lot of injuries throughout this entire year, and there's a lot of teams who had to deal with a lot of things, specifically with these Ottawa GGs at the quarterback position. Your guy, your savior, Ben Maracle, goes down very early on. We see Ryan Lacandro come in, and then he goes down relatively later. And then Josh Jansen comes in, and you and I are looking around being like, yo, this Josh Jansen kid, he might be legit. He might be pretty damn good for this Ottawa GGs team. And so now you have a scenario going into this year where you have Ben Maracle, Ryan Lacandro, and Josh Jansen all back in the same quarterback room. Your resolution tied to these guys is to establish who that quarterback is early. If you're going into week two, week three, week four, and you're still trading certain reps and you're still going back and forth, it's too late. The rest of the OUA is too damn good for you to be going back and forth on quarterbacks. In an ideal setting, your first 2 weeks, you're in training camp, you give your guys, you know, they have opportunities with the first team, and you set things out and you say, nope, this is our guy, whether it's Maracle, Lacandro, whether it's Jansen, whoever it is, this is our guy. We're rolling with them, hit the ground running, build some chemistry, and get this thing going. This is an Ottawa GG team that you and I are both very high on. I think that there's a lot of potential here. They're missing a couple of key pieces, and obviously losing Amilcar Polk is going to be a massive blow, but I still think there's enough pieces here where you can make a legitimate run, but a lot of things need to go your way, and you can't start it off with not having proper chemistry or knowing who's going to be in that QB1 position.
And then whoever's in that QB2 position, you trade across the province to the Windsor Lancers for one of their three running backs, probably Wavy Mambo, and maybe you get a first chip draft pick or recruit pick for the 2025 offseason.
We were joking about this beforehand, but could you imagine you get Wigby Mumbo traded to the Ottawa GGs to replace an Amilcar Polk and to keep that run game going, but you trade Josh Jansen to the Windsor Lancers to have a quarterback? Oh my God.
Who says no? All right, well, let's stay in the eastern portion of the province before we go and visit those very Windsor Lancers and head over to the Queens Golden Gaels. And this was the team that more than any, though we've done some roster diving for a lot of these teams, that our focus for the New Year's resolution very heavily resides in, which is get your young guys good and fast. One of the things that made this team so spectacular this year was obviously the run game. And that is, of course, in large part due to the likes of Theo Grant and Evan Florin, and Ryan Berta, all of whom were returning from stints in the CFL, obviously on top of the fact that they were lead blocking for one Jared Kasari. All four of those names I just mentioned, I am almost certain, are going to be gone. Mm-hmm. But I think you highlighted the impact, the more specific way to frame it, because we could go through a number of these players, like a guy like Stefan Easton, Leon Sutherland, and Aiden O'Neill are also in their fifth years. And those are major names, Aiden O'Neill at receiver, and then Sutherland and East on the defensive side. But I think you really hit the nail on the head, Tom, in highlighting not just in their fifth-year players, but a few fourth-year players that we could see getting drafted come May, and just where exactly those players are all situated that have made Queens dominant and how they need to fill those gaps.
Most definitely. When you look at the past 2 years, even 3 years, a big reason why Queens has been in that upper echelon of teams and they've been really dominant within this stint has been because of that offensive and defensive line. You look back on the OUA All-Stars from this past year, from the 2 years ago, and it's 90% is either Western or it's Queens. And both of those teams directly have success because of that. Now, the amount of guys that you have on that O&D line for Queens that are in their fourth and fifth year makes me very nervous. You have a Darian Newell who will very likely get drafted and could potentially stick as well. So you're losing out that. I think Van Wishart is gone, like we were saying. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, Silas Hubert is back, and that's massive for you. Hopefully, he can stay healthy this year. But there's a lot of potential positions that you need to replace going into this next season on your O&D line. And that just makes me very nervous. So whoever's going to be stepping in, getting into that, I have total confidence in Tom Flaxman and the rest of the coaching staff. I'm sure they're doing their thing. But there's something to be said about not having game experience, not seeing those bullets fly live. No matter what you do, you can't replicate that in practice. So get them through their paces. Get the rust off the shoulder pads as soon as you can, because if you want to get to where you want to be, you got to hit the ground running immediately.
And that history of their dominance on the O&D line, we can even go back 5-6 years to, and obviously longer. I mean, we're talking about the Queens Golden Gaels, but you know, guys like Cam Lawson and Anthony mm-hmm. Federico, who were once again all-world talents when it comes to OUA defensive linemen, and obviously the stars they've put out on the offensive line as well. That's where, on the one hand, I think it's important to highlight that, but the other hand, I think for our Queens Golden Gaels faithful out there tuning in, you can probably sit back and that whole idea that we kind of talked about with Carlton and having faith in the people making the decisions and who they're bringing in, that even though it is terrifying when you lose guys like Grant and Florin and possibly losing Newell on your O&D lines and some other guys I'm sure I missed out in that mix, but you just say, hey, we thought the sky was going to fall when Lawson was getting NFL looks, right? We mm-hmm. thought, you know, going back to when you and me were playing and guys like Miniachi in there for them, yeah, right? And obviously other guys, our guy who's still doing it with the Calgary Stampeders now for all these years, why am I forgetting his name, but that we would have competed against directly. Tom's making a face because he's forgetting too. We'll get there. My apologies. He's a Toronto guy as well, which makes it hurt that much more. But yeah, Queens.
Going into this, I think Queens has established themselves as somebody who really goes after their O&D line. For years and years, like we said, with all of the names that we have mentioned, they have solid players every single year. But this is just another year where you got to keep that tradition going. You got to find those big boys. You got to make sure that they're in those Golden Gale colors and just make sure that you are hitting the ground running. That's the one thing. You can have all the talent in the world. You can have all the potential in the world. If you're not ready to go when the whistle blows, then it's kind of all out the window. Also, another quick little piece that I wanted to bring up here, and we can dive into this a little later on, whatever. CFL News on Twitter put out a ranking of all of the U Sports logos.
Oh.
Dead last was your Guelph Griffins. In 26 was the Queens Golden Gaels.
Spicy.
Peter Bierce put that out to us. And yeah, I'm right there with them. That's crap. That Q is iconic. There's no other Q in the realm of U sports football in the realm of just college football in general in the States or whatever that is as iconic that will have that kind of pull, that's crap.
Where do my Golden Bears fall on that list, Tom?
Oh, they're up there.
Yes.
They're up there. Yeah.
By the way, his name is Derek Wigan. His name is Derek Wigan. While you look up where those beautiful Alberta Golden Bears ranked on that list, I'll get us started with the next team we have, which if you're following along and if you were tuned in all last year, you know it's Tom's Windsor Lancers. Hey, once again, a beautiful year for Windsor, and I think in some ways reflecting the comment we made about Waterloo and finishing in the red zone and how it's more a question of oh my God, you have a real gap here or a real gap there. Like, this is a team that ran the ball with the best of them. Obviously, Joey Zorn was a little banged up, and whose defense, and specifically their defensive line, was the best in Canada. And like, by the numbers, that defense at times, and I can't remember if they finished there, but was the best in Canada. But much like with Waterloo, though, those teams are on different footings at this point in their journeys and where they're at. It was more about, hey, we got to tidy some things up. And with Windsor, it's reduced the penalties. First in the OUA, fifth in all of U sports. And unfortunately, a bit of a trend we're seeing here. They got the Dom at the helm, JP Circelli. And it also just, it feels odd for someone who has the gravitas of Coach Circelli and how buttoned up he carries himself and that presence that he would then be leading a team that would so consistently lead the league in penalties. No doubt there's other parts where we can maybe critique and do whatever, but I think that was the one where for a team, like once you're in the caliber where we're saying you're competing for Yates Cups, you can't be doing those types of things. You can't have that. I think that's where we stay on that, Tom. What do you say on that?
Yeah, up 1,000%. When you're playing against the top tier in the OUA, when you're playing against the Westerns, the Lauriers, the Queens of the world, you're already going to be in a grudge match regardless. You cannot afford to also give them additional yardage and give them additional chances in order to be successful, whatever. Going offside, you know, doing a pass interference penalty, holding, whatever that looks like, you cannot afford to give these people more chances in order to beat you because they've already got some just juggernauts on their teams that they're able to do that without your additional help. So I think making sure that you're cleaning that up, you're focusing on yourself, whether that means getting more disciplined, whether that means just understanding the playbook a little bit better, getting your footwork better so you're in a better position, whatever that looks like, that's where Windsor really needs to focus here. I think of all of the position groups, you could probably make a case that quarterback needs to get a little bit better, sure. But for the most part, you're solid across the board. I like their receivers. Their offensive and defensive line were solid. The running backs, obviously, unbelievable. Defensive line, the linebackers. I really think that this team is pretty well kept. You just have to limit your penalties. That's really the biggest thing here.
And I mean, they were a holding penalty away from maybe advancing to the Yates Cup this year. So it's right there. It's you know, 1 + 1 isn't adding up to 5 here. It adds up to 2 like it always has. Reduce your penalties, win games. Mm-hmm. Tom, let me pass you the mic to get us going on the runner-up in the OUA, of course, that being the Laurier Golden Hawks, a team that we were so bullish on from the moment Mad Jack Moore stepped on the airwaves with us. What is their New Year's resolution?
Yeah, we're going back to the KW for this one. And once again, we've got two kind of set up here. The first one that I'm going to go with is a little bit more obvious. This is your field goal kicking. Your percentage there, 10 of 18 for 55% this year. I have no idea what was going on with that kick game because last year it seemingly was automatic. But that, not only is that bad because you're leaving points on the board, we mentioned this in the regular season, you are now changing the dynamic of your offense. Yeah. Todd Galloway cannot call the same amount of calls knowing that, hey, you know, obviously we always want to get touchdowns, we always want to get first downs, whatever, but maybe I can be a little bit more conservative in this play and then make sure that, hey, we can just kick the field goal and we'll be set. If Dawson Hodge isn't playing how he should be playing and isn't in that all-Canadian conversation, which he should be, then suddenly you have to get a lot more aggressive with your play calls because you can't rely on a third down field goal. You have to make sure that you can get into the end zone, whatever. Now, obviously, they had a pretty good offense for that, but still, your kick game needs to be there. It needs to be better.
1,000%. And then on the other hand, Tom, this one's somewhat more philosophical, if you will. What's the other resolution we have for them?
Beat Western.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how close you got. It doesn't matter that you gave them a good game. You have not beaten them. Beat the Mustangs.
That's really what it is. It didn't matter how many times you and I came on here and thought that, hey, you know what? They can be in a close game and they can win that game. And guess what? They were in a close game and they almost won that game. People still cried from the heavens that how could we possibly pick Western? And of course, Western fans are going to do what Western fans do. And that's all well and good. I love that they support their team with the gusto that they do. Then they go against them in the playoffs. And for a number of reasons, including some very good ones about certain players that were banged up, maybe even missing a former OUA MVP at running back for Western. And we still say, you know what? I think Laurier can go into their house and beat them. They almost did already, and now Western's more banged up. They didn't get it done, but they came close, and people gave us crap. Laurier, hey, look, we're here for you. We're trying to support you, what you're doing, because what you're doing is amazing, and you are as good as it gets in the OUA. Until you beat it, seeing is believing for so many people when it comes to sports. It doesn't matter. This isn't horseshoes. Beat Western, get to the eights, and this is going to lead into our comment on the final team we have, which is, surprise, surprise, those Western Mustangs. This coming year, win the eights, because if you win the eights, OUA, earmuffs AUS, you're going to the Vanier, which we collectively as Ontario, thank you Kingston, are hosting. Beat Western and get to a Vanier. And just to tie in quickly with the Dawson Hodge piece, going back to the year prior, goes 15 of 18, 83%. So the difference of 4 made field goals from 11 of 18 to 15. But hey, that's 12 points. That's not nothing. That's almost 2 touchdowns there. Well, that is 2 touchdowns subtracting the extra points. Yeah. We set it up there. The last team, of course, the Western Mustangs, are OUA champions. And it comes down to this, Tom. Win the Vanier and do so with a statement. No one's going to care if Western gets to the Yates Cup. No one's going to care if Western wins the Yates Cup. And in that national semifinal, they're going to get probably St. Effects. And when, I don't know if they're going to Antigonish or if they're going to be coming to London, no one's going to care when Western wins by 50 plus. You're going to be facing UBC or Saskatchewan or Laval or Montreal, or apologies if there's another team out west that I'm taking for granted that might have a shot of being there. Go Golden Bears. When you do battle with them, you must win in a statement. Because if it is a CanWest team, and that would be excellent to see them take out the RSCQ in a semifinal matchup. Even if you are crowned Vanier Cup champions in the year 2024, on the field of your arch rivals, the Queens Golden Gales, you know what they're going to be saying in Quebec? You still haven't beat us in 3 years. Last time we played you, we made you look foolish. Year before that, we came to your house and we made you look foolish. And two different teams, albeit. This isn't even, you can't get over Laval. You can't get over Montreal. You can't get over either one of them. It hasn't been in this. Let me pause there. Get to the Vanier. And if it's a team from CanWest, beat them down so that all the way across that border, which isn't very far from Kingston, they're saying, oh snap, okay, Western is pissed off. And if it is against Montreal or Laval, maybe just win baby is the mentality and that will be enough. But once again, they're on a bit of a winning streak against us. And that's us as Ontario football. When you win that Yates, you put a lot of pressure. You put the pressure of 10 other teams on your shoulders, Western. Get the job done. Go win a Vanier.
Couldn't have said it better myself. There is a certain level of expectation when you go to Western. It's not just good enough to just win. You have to win in a certain fashion here. You're not just going into a Yates Cup and just like squeaking by with a victory and happy or whatever. You're going into a Yates Cup and you're scoring touchdowns and hitting the oil thigh because you can, because this is something that you're a part of. You are a part of this fraternity of excellence when you go to Western, where just winning in a certain manner isn't good enough. And especially losing in the manner that they did in the national semis against Montreal is nowhere close to where this team expects for themselves. They shot themselves in the foot. They made us look bad. And once again, we saw constantly on that Twitter, oh, the OUA is washed. The OUA sucks. Like, it's not nowhere close to being as good. You are now the direct representation of us at the moment you get out of the OUA. When you win that Yates Cup, you represent the OUA along with yourselves. Western, get back to form. We talked about it before. There's a reason why we picked Laurier twice, albeit we were wrong twice. This didn't seem like the typical Western squad. There seemed to be a couple cracks in the armor. There seemed to be something going on with them. They weren't dominating the fashion that they normally dominate in. And that standpoint, even though you're looking at us like we're insane because they haven't lost a regular season game since freaking 2017 or 2018 or whatever it is, that still there needs to be a level of that. Western, it's not just win. It's not just, hey, we squeaked by a win against Mac when Mac is doing as poorly as they are this past year. It's, hey, we went into Hamilton this past year and we won by 40 points. Hey, we went out to York this year. We won by 80 points. And that's like where your barometer is. That's where your level is. That's where you need to get back to as these Western Mustangs. If you do win the Yates Cup, which once again, they are poised to do once again, get out of Ontario, showcase why the OUA is the best damn league in U sports and dominate once again. That's got to be Western's mentality.
Amen. And to the credit of those other 10 teams, and specifically looking at really three to maybe five of them, our league, once again, to your point, Tom, is really good right now.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, much like that, we don't always follow the other leagues as carefully as we could and to the level that we follow our league. Other people aren't seeing that. But there are teams at the table now with you, Western, with knives out pointed right at you. And so if you're going to slip up, a Laurier is going to catch you. A Windsor is going to catch you. Queens is going to catch you. Mm-hmm. Ottawa Carleton, they're on the horizon, right? So get back to form, get back to dominance. And of course, yeah, everyone's rolling their eyes in the greater London area at us right now, to your point, because they haven't lost since, you know, darn near, since Nate Hobbs was setting records in Kingston, right?
Yeah.
Old man Hobbs doing his thing there. But once again, that point of the representation of our league when you get out of Ontario, that's where we stand with this. Tom, two last ones I think we'll just kind of throw out quickly. They kind of coincide a little bit. We want to just throw out a little New Year's resolution towards the OUA and U Sports generally. We obviously can come off as critical, and undoubtedly we are. At the end of the day, I hope that if you listen to our podcast or consume any of the content we put out, and as always, thank you for consuming our content, however it is you are doing so, that we come from a place of wanting to see this sport in this country, in this province, grow. And a lot of that comes down to the marketing and the way that you present the game. So for the OUA, I'll throw both these out and we can kind of just talk about them to wrap this all up. For the OUA, it's continue on to improve your marketing of the product. And sound like a broken record on this, because I am, when it comes to this point specifically, which is the game time disparity. I know we talked about that ad they ran through the Yates where it's the little boy with the two laptops and he can watch both these games at the same time. And I can understand, like, I can understand how the OUA TV makes it accessible because so many people are cutting the cord. And I'm not saying we're going back to the days of Tim McAuliffe on the score, because I am somewhat of a realist. As much as I am a dreamer, we unfortunately are not in any time in the near future, and we definitely need to get Jack Moore on to go through a deep dive of those media pieces that he shared with us, I think, after one of our conversations we had on a podcast, just so the broader fan base can understand all these machinations, and frankly, where some people, we don't need to name names in the process of that conversation, but where some people made some very poor decisions and some companies made some really poor decisions that have lessened the product that is, or the the viewership or the viewability of the product that is OUA and U Sport Football, which we know is a darn good product by virtue of the talent. But at the end of the day, spread out your games, make it more accessible, put a bigger stage for some of these games when you have primetime matchups like your Queens and Westerns, your Lauriers and Windsors, your Ottawas and Carlton. Obviously, Ottawa and Carlton, they do. And that should be the template they use every week. You should try and have some game of that magnitude. And from the U Sports standpoint, just to kind of connect all these things in, let's try and at least get some preseason interconference games or some more. Obviously, for years, Laval was inviting teams in who they thought they'd be seeing down the road. You obviously were an example of that 12 years ago now, Tom, or almost 13. And as well, send your flipping commentators to the Vanier Cup. Come on now. Deshaun Stevens and Mark Lee are top-notch in their field. Send them to Kingston. Deshaun, what size you wear, man? I will send you a coat if you know what I mean? Like, Mark Lee, what size you wear? I'll send you some hats and mitts if that's what the problem is. You don't want to be out there in the cold. And I know it's not them. I say that teasingly. Mm-hmm. Send your people to the Vanier to call on it. It is a whole different beast being in that environment, not having someone on a phone call with you being like, yeah, the crowd's really getting into it right now. Tom, OUA U Sports New Year's resolutions.
Both of those are tied into the fact that we want more emphasis, more work, more effort, more whatever into these games from the exterior, from your higher-ups, your board of directors, you whoever else. It is so infuriating to have the passion that you and I have about this game, to know that the quality of the players are there, to know that the excitement is there. You're going to tell me that regular season Western versus Queens game goes viral because of the actual the commentator on the radio broadcast and, oh, wow, whatever. The reason it goes viral is because the game is so goddamn good. That's why everybody was talking about it, because it was a tight game. Queens scores and then Western scores right afterwards, because it was a quality product. It's right there. Like, it's not like you're having to search for, hey, how do we frame this properly? How do we do this properly? The quality is right there. You've got the players, you've got the atmosphere. You just have to market it properly. And whether that means game time disparity, like we mentioned with the OUA and spacing that out or not, it just needs to be properly showcased.
And to that point as well, even if the virality of that call was because of the intensity, that is a reflection of that individual, who I apologize for not remembering his name, understanding the stakes of a Western Queens matchup that was as competitive as it was, ending in that fashion. Any mm-hmm. football game that ends like that, that is beyond belief. That is going to drop jaws. But when you add in the history and the magnitude that is baked into this product, you are sitting on you have the golden goose there. You just need to show the world the fruits of that. This metaphor is going all over the place. You, as you said, Tom, the product is there. You don't need to say like, oh my God, like, are people going to care? People care. There is history. You award the oldest trophy in all of football in North America to the winner of your conference. Like, that is massive. That is history. That is important. Showcase that. You don't need to. It's not. I try to pull my punches when it comes to, well, I don't understand the full machinations of this, that, and whatever. You have the product. Showcase it. It really is that simple.
It's the reason why we pull our hair out, because it seems, and for sure, and yeah, and Zach's pulled all of his hair out. But it seems to us on the outside looking in, and I'll give them that, whatever, that there could be more, that there's more things that could be happening here, that there's, you know, without having to break the bank by any means, there's more things that could be done in order to grow this game here. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know how, you know, what the OUA does, what U Sports does. They've got all of the other sports to worry about as well. So I'll give them that little grace or that benefit of the doubt. But at some point in time, when you're staring at the exact same problems year after year after year, you have to think, are these even on your radar? Do you recognize these as problems? Do you care at all? Like, we need to start having these kind of conversations here. And I know it's just the two of us here, a couple of former players going back and forth. But I think if nothing else from this podcast, if we can just pump our own tires here, we've showcased that there is a passionate fan base, that there's people out there who love this game, who love the fact that we give it some kind of coverage because they think like we do and that this deserves more and more. Like, there needs to be more of an emphasis here because the fan base is there, the potential is there. Like, it's driving me nuts. But just give your product a chance to be successful in that regard.
And just tying in with the U-Sport piece, I think that goes back to the conversation that gets inflamed when we get to national semifinal games about, well, there's clearly an OUA bias with the top 10 rankings and, oh, this, that, and the third. You know, send Laurier out to go play, you know, UBC for a preseason game. Bring, mm-hmm. Bishops to, you know, whatever you got to do. Just for a few of these games a year, preseason, what have you. I recognize the cost. Or maybe you make it a neutral site type thing. And kind of have it more as like a kind of going to the days of like youth football, like a jamboree type thing, and just having some of these teams there. You meet some of these guys from the different parts of the country. You make it, you market it as this kind of, you know, national, whatever you want to say, and you go from there. Just as a way as to create this. Spoiler alert, it's a big flipping country. So it's kind of neat if you can build in these opportunities to bring together programs that span from sea to sea in that regard into a site where you can have players from all over the country, or maybe guys that went to high school and they went their separate ways that are now reunited in this aspect of whatever you want to call it. And I know money's a big factor there. So once again, from that standpoint, I'll pump the brakes somewhat because I don't know what the budgets are looking like, but there are certainly other people, as much as you and I are passionate, there are other people that are likewise passionate and want to make these things happen. So let's make them happen, and let's make 2024 that much better than 2023, because it was a hell of a year across the board, from the insurgence of the continued resurgence of Windsor and Laurier, to Western's seemingly bumpy road to yet another Yates Cup, to seeing the Ottawa region in such strength and fortitude, to seeing Waterloo continue on this fairly quick bounce back from the Trey Ford era, to Guelph going through all this turmoil with their quarterbacks over the years and having all these injuries, to being a team that looks really frisky in the future under Coach Saria, to the Toronto team still not quite figuring their stuff out, and to Mac being in such a precarious spot and not really knowing what direction they're going to be heading in. There is things to find interesting in every game you tune into on a Saturday at 1 o'clock on OUA TV. Tom, last words here. Once again, we are recording on December 30th. So though we start the pod off with our little Happy New Year's remarks to those listening, as that's when they will be hearing it, what final remarks do you want to make on the last pod we put out in the year 2023?
What a season we had. What a year we had for OUA U Sports football. I think you and I specifically really hit our stride. And if I can just pump our tires for a little bit here, it was a hell of a year. It was a ton of fun doing this with you and seeing all of the people who are showcasing how much they care about the OUA, and they're reaching out to us as well. It's been some of the coolest experiences to go along with this. You and I both have just such a passion for this. And so the fact that we're talking and people are listening is just the coolest thing in the world. You guys are absolutely the best. Like he said, we are recording this in 2023, but Happy New Year to everybody who's tuning in. We are going to have a ton of content for you coming out in this next year. We're not going to leave you in the blackout period in between seasons, like unfortunately happened last year. We've got some content spread out. We've got some game plans going here. So we are very excited for that. We're very excited that you are all here with us. And just overwhelmingly, thank you once again for a phenomenal 2023.
That'll do it for the New Year's Resolution pod. Once again, keep your eyes and ears peeled for the Exit Meeting podcast series that will be coming out, once again, somewhat to be determined based on us getting our dates booked with the guests that we're hoping to get on for those episodes. Once again, our more thorough breakdown and look forward to each of the 11 OUA programs and sort of who or where they're going and where they're coming from. So the Exit Meeting podcast series coming your way, like I said, probably mid to late January for the first couple of pods. And moving forward, we have some other content, as Tom alluded to. So, Tom, my dear beloved friend, what a pleasure it has been with you. Luckily, I'm not having to say bye. It is merely a goodbye to the 2023 season, as we'll be hitting the ball rolling and we will continue to grow this thing and try to grow the totality of OUA and U Sport football across Canada in the process. So you'll be hearing from us very shortly in the new year with the Exit Meeting series coming your way right here at the 55.